trust me.
Dude, you trust me.
Trust me. I'm like a smart person.
Yeah, I've never lied to you. I never have lied to you.
You think that one person has all the answers?
Don't!
Welcome to Trust Me, the podcast about cults, extreme belief, and the abuse of power from two Angelinos who've actually experienced it. I am Lola Blanc, and I do not want to be called an Angelino.
And I'm Megan Elizabeth, and I'm the one who suggested it. Yeah. We've used up, like, everything to call ourselves.
Oh, no. There are so many more. So many more.
You were like, what could it be? And I was, like, looking around. I was like, two pencils, two, I don't know why I said two Thora Birches. Like, I don't know.
We could be just every white actress there is.
Yeah.
Today, our guest is Gloria Jackson Nefertiti. She is a poet, a singer, and a speaker on topics like polyamory, bisexuality, and her own experiences with autism. She's going to tell us what it was like being the only Black woman in an all-white, cultish Christian group in college, the racism and bullying she experienced, what it feels like to be laughed at all the time, and why autistic people like herself are uniquely susceptible to coercive control, plus how to protect yourself or your loved one with autism.
Yep, and we'll also discuss what seemingly small life changes helped her realize she needed to leave, how her late autism diagnosis has given her clarity on her life, and how she's been able to embrace who she really is.
Which is a lovely human being, might I add.
I really, really, really enjoy her.
Megan, please tell me, what on earth is the culty thing that's happened to you this week?
Okay, so I was talking to somebody, and they seem to like energy work just as I do, you know, manifestation conversations kind of. And they were asking a few questions about my energy, which I thought was like super cool, you know. But then at a certain point, I realized that it was a Scientologist, and they were doing the Dianetics? What is it called?
Dianetics is Dianetics. The name of the book.
Dianetics on me. And I was like, oh my God.
So are you a Scientologist now?
I am. No. No, I politely declined the offer. But it is scary how much in common there are.
L. Ron Hubbard sure incorporated a lot of things from a lot of other places that you probably would connect with. So that makes sense. But they admitted they were Scientologists. And did they try to get you to, like, come to something? Like, how did it end?
I mean, it ended with me being like, oh, my gosh, yeah, cool. I mean, I should look into that.
Oh, you're so sweet.
Oh, man. Yeah. But it is just, like, fucked up, man. And I'm scared to say that because they're so powerful, but ugh.
I think we'll be okay. I think they have bigger fish to fry. We haven't done a Scientology episode yet, but we have one coming soon.
Well,
y'all.
we can do one on me when I leave, since I'm obviously joining. What's your cultiest thing of the week?
All right, so the app Clubhouse, right? Everybody's
yes.
Downloading it, everybody's on it, everybody's talking about it. It's the big thing. I loved it immediately. I loved listening to all of the wildly diverse perspectives that I got to hear on there. But I also kind of hate it because I hate public speaking and I hate phone calls and I hate Zoom. And it's kind of like an amalgamation of all of those.
Wow.
However, I recognize that it is an incredible place for people to connect and exchange ideas and, you know, just really get access to each other in a way that I think is really important during COVID. That said, there are so many people who speak about a multitude of topics as though they are the authority on that topic. And I'm like looking up some of them and I'm like, what are your credentials here? And it's like, oh, well, no, not this. There's not much. They just like have a confident voice and know a little bit about a subject. And I've heard people expressing some concern about the potential for people to be scammed.
Uh-huh.
This way, because they're presenting themselves as authorities on stuff that's related to like money or whatever it may be. But yeah, I don't know. It's kind of fascinating. It's like a little social experiment to see who emerges as acknowledged as a leader in a particular area.
Wow, 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 wow.
Yeah, which is oversimplifying. There are some people who really have interesting things to say and who really are educated in the topic and whatever. It's obviously like all kinds of people on there, but there is just room for some of the shadier people to kind of just jump in, you know?
God, this is why we can't have nice things. It's like, hey, look, you guys, it's a place for people to talk to each other. Scams.
Yeah, I know.
Jesus, let us have it for 10 minutes.
Honestly, the worst thing about it is how many actors in Los Angeles I know who are starting actor rooms.
Oh,
and
dear.
Talking about acting.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
Sorry. I'm an actor. Why do I hate on actors so much? Actors are great. Love them. Hate listening to them talk about acting.
It's hard. But come to my acting class. It's at, just kidding.
The Scientology Center.
Yeah.
They will make you famous, so it's worth it.
Oh, definitely. Infamous, for sure. Ah.
I tried to reach out to Beck to get him to come on this podcast to talk about his Scientology experience. He ignored me.
Damn it, Beck.
Beck, come on.
Come on, Beck. Beck is one of my favorite musicians. And the fact that he's not on this podcast is really annoying. I'm going to freak out.
Beck, if you're listening, which I know that you're not, please come on this podcast. I mean, I think he actually doesn't like talking about Scientology. I think that's probably why.
I think he doesn't like talking about anything.
My favorite kind of man. JK, opposite. All right, there's no good segue here, but we love Gloria and we should start getting to know her story now.
Yes, ma'am.
Here we go. Welcome, Gloria Jackson Nefertiti.
Thank you.
Start us at the beginning. Like, what was your childhood like leading up to your college experience? Where are you at when you first meet this group?
The way that I started out was I was born and raised in Mississippi. I was born in 1956. And not only that, but I was born into a really, for lack of a better term, I mean, it was a domestic violence type of environment, you know, situation. Mm. My mother was really the one who got the brunt of the violence, physical and mental, you know. Although, I mean, we certainly got our share of it as well,
right.
You know. I have traumatic brain injury.
Oh,
and the reason for that is from the constant blows to the head, you know, for my father. Mm. Yeah. And I'm sure that I'm not the only one who has the traumatic brain injury in the family, you know.
Right.
I mean, I'm sure that my mother got it way worse than I did. So it was also a very religious family. And so you can imagine that there was plenty of hypocrisy going
on.
Right,
right.
And at the same time in school, I was bullied constantly. You know, I had no idea why. I mean, I realize now that is because of autism, you know. I was diagnosed, it was in May 2019, 6 months before I turned 63.
Wow.
Believe it or not, you know. So talk about being diagnosed really late in life, you know. So I had that to contend with. I never really felt like I belonged anywhere. I never felt like I was like the other kids at all.
Right.
There was always something different. And I didn't know what it was. But my classmates definitely let me know constantly that there was, you know, something different about me. I mean, they were constantly asking, why do you act the way you do? You know, why do you act so weird? Or why do you act so corny? And, you know, how on earth I was supposed to answer those questions.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Right.
But that was something that I went through constantly. And then in 1971, you know, I started going to, it was previously an all-white school.
Mm.
I mean, the year before, it became integrated for the first time. You know, the year before I started going there. And there was a race riot on the first day of school.
Wow.
I had heard.
This is a high school?
High school.
Okay.
By the time that I started going, it was fully integrated. And I was still having issues being able to, you know, feel like I belonged and that I was a part.
Totally.
You know? Yeah.
And then in 72, the whole family moved to Portland, Oregon. I still ran into plenty of issues at the new school. you know, coming from Mississippi, I mean, obviously everything was very rigid and very conservative. You know, there were strong, rigid gender roles. Boys did this, you know, girls did this. And
Southern conservative culture. Yeah, yeah.
Yes, yes.
What religion was your family in Mississippi, and did it continue into Oregon?
I guess maybe you could call it non-denominational, but it was a Protestant religion. But the church that we were the most involved with was the Church of God in Christ, which is probably like the largest African-American Protestant mm-hmm. religion. Mm-hmm. It was also, you know, more Pentecostal, you know, where there was a lot of dancing in the spirit and, you know, speaking in tongues. Mm. And it was very emotional, very demonstrative.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Were you very religious yourself at that age?
I was, but, you know, I just kind of felt like that was something that was pretty much forced on me.
Right.
I figured, well, you know, this is at least one way that I can kind of fit in, although I still didn't completely, but
right.
You know,
something else that I want to mention about high school is that moving to Portland, Oregon, I mean, you know, was a real culture shock.
Yeah.
I was attending John Adams High School. I remember there was one thing that happened that, you know, just kind of showed me loud and clear that I was no longer in Mississippi. On the first day of class for me, I remember one of the students wanted to introduce me around, and I saw him talking to somebody, and he said, oh, Phil, would you come here for a minute? And so Phil came over, and then the guy said, Gloria, this is Phil, our teacher. And I was shocked. I thought, you call the teachers by their first name?
Wow, yeah.
I mean, that was a big deal. You know, in Mississippi, everybody was Mr. and Mrs.
Right, right.
So you're in Oregon just like, whoa, culture shock. Everything's different.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. In high school, I became involved with Campus Crusade for Christ, which was specifically for high schools and colleges. Mm. I thought that that was one place where I could finally sort of feel like I belonged somewhere. I mean, maybe I didn't completely, because I was usually the only Black person at the meetings.
Right.
You know?
Can you describe what it is? It's like a program.
Right. It's a campus ministry. And during the lunch hour or in the evenings at somebody's home, you know, they'll have these sing-alongs. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. and then somebody who is on staff for Campus Crusade for Christ will usually speak to the group and try to make Jesus Christ seem really relevant
right.
to the young people.
Just a fun dude. Yeah.
Yeah. Right, right. Sometimes we would, you know, sing songs that were to the tune of popular songs or commercials. Or
wow, commercials. Yeah. So this is just trying to get, like, kids interested in church. Yeah.
Trying to make church cool fun.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So then when you went to college, was it the same group of people that you had known in high school?
Some of them were, right. Yes. I also became involved with Campus Crusade when I moved to Portland State University.
Right.
Mm. So it must have been like around 75, 76, so something like that, that I discovered this group that I realized was a cult. Mm-hmm. You know? I was at Portland State University, and they had this table set up between, you know, two of the buildings. They were, you know, signing people up for Bible studies and whatnot. They looked interesting, and so I went ahead and signed up. You know, and I found out, too, that there was this apartment building in Beaverton, Oregon, and the men lived in one apartment and the women lived in another apartment. I remember hearing about that, and I thought, wow, you know, maybe this will be finally a chance where I can find people who I can relate to and, you know, feel like I really belong. Mm-hmm. One thing that I didn't know at the time that I had been realizing recently is that, first of all, I had no idea that I had autism. I mean, you know, because right. I was diagnosed so late. But what I also didn't know is that these cult leaders will typically prey upon people who seem very unsure of themselves, mm-hmm. You know, people who are easily intimidated. People who have low self-esteem or look as though they really don't belong.
Right. Or in a period in their life where they're
vulnerable.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Which just happens to be a lot of byproducts of autism, right?
Yes, yes, exactly.
So, Gloria, can you actually describe to us, like, now that you understand autism more and now that you've been diagnosed, like, what are some of the signs of autism or how does it demonstrate itself exactly?
I know that it's maybe different for everybody. There's the saying that if you've met one person with autism, you've met one person with autism, you know,
because
everybody's different. Right. Yeah. But for me, one of the ways that it manifests is that, you know, I process information differently from other people. You know, jokes will frequently go over my head. Mm-hmm. Or I won't really know how to relate to everybody else. I mean, I noticed that in grade school and in high school, it had gotten to the point where no matter what I would say or do, everybody would just practically fall over laughing, you know, because there was something, you know, just different about me. You know,
awful.
It was really awful.
Yeah.
Because, you know, of course, that caused people to ask me, you know, why do you act the way you do? You know, and that's really one of the ways that it manifests is just by not knowing how to be. I've read in more than one place that autistic children tend to act like little professors.
Oh,
because the way that they talk usually sounds older than their years.
Like kind of formal.
Very formal.
Interesting. Very formal. All right, so I'm just going to jump in here with some information. According to a survey by the National Autistic Society in the UK, half of all autistic adults are abused by somebody they trusted as a friend, which is insane. Tom Matters, the National Autistic Society campaign manager, told The Guardian, quote, "People with autism can find it difficult to interpret others' motivations. They misjudge relationships, and left unsupported, many are taken advantage of." Tony Atwood, the psychologist known for his work on Asperger's syndrome, spoke to cult expert and friend of the podcast, Steve Hassan, and apparently told him that people on the autism spectrum can be especially susceptible to cults because they're really good targets for love bombing. There are a variety of reasons why people on the spectrum are especially vulnerable.
I got a lot of my speech pattern pretty much from, you know, watching television. I remember this was after I'd left the group that I had kind of gotten into trouble because there was this minister who I knew. And I remember for several nights in a row, I would just drop in on him and his wife, you know, and their kids.
Mm-hmm.
I would always do it during dinner time.
Oh.
Yeah. And eventually he just blew up at me,
you know,
which was, it was bad enough for anybody to do that, but for a minister.
Right. Yeah.
And he was telling me about how inconvenient this was, you know, and it just showed me how in the Christian community, people don't really know how to handle anger or what to do with their own anger.
Right.
The reason why I bring that up is because when I was talking earlier about how I would watch television to learn how you were supposed to act and what you were supposed to do in given situations, and there were so many sitcoms where somebody would
just pop
drop in.
Oh my gosh, that's so true. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Not only would they drop in, I mean, they wouldn't knock or anything. They would just, you know, open the door and, you know,
wow.
say hi.
Yes.
And, you know, and then the studio audience would applaud and, you know. You know?
That's what a good point. Yeah.
You know, so, and being that we didn't really have any friends at home or very few, I didn't know.
Yeah,
you know, I thought that's what friends do, is that they, you know, just drop in anytime,
right.
You know?
So you're kind of searching for belonging and just feeling like, I don't know, I think everybody feels this way, and maybe you in particular, like, what do I do? What's the, like, container? What are the rules, kind of?
Mm-hmm.
And so then at this college, should we jump right into meeting Dawn? Is that, how did this happen?
Well, Dawn was actually one of the people who was at the table at Portland State University, basically recruiting people for this group.
What was your first impression of him?
He seemed nice, you know, really outgoing. And maybe that's another sign of autism is, you know, just being very trusting. you know. And even if there was something about him that, you know, maybe seemed off, which it didn't at the time.
Of
course. But even if there had been, you know, I'm sure I would have just ignored it because I just wouldn't want to think about it.
Right.
But I remember a week or so later that some of the staff people from Campus Crusade for Christ at the college got in touch with me. I don't know if they saw me talking to Dawn or what, but they somehow got wind of the fact that I was planning on joining this group. And I remember them cautioning me against it.
So what did they say?
For one thing, they said that he didn't seem to be able to take criticism. And he was really blunt and insensitive. And a lot of the times his bluntness really didn't land well. And especially with the female staff members. Apparently more than once, you know, he made them cry.
Wow.
The Campus Crusade staff members said to really, really be careful.
So at this point, he has a separate group going on already?
Right. Yeah, the group that he was recruiting for, it was a brand new group.
Gotcha.
So it, you know, had absolutely nothing to do with Campus Crusade.
Got it.
Yeah.
What goes through your head when they warn you?
I guess I thought I would just take what they had to say with a grain of salt. I think I need to, you know, see for myself.
Yeah, I would do the same thing.
Yeah.
How was this different than Campus Crusades?
Well, it certainly didn't start out that different. I remember we would do this survey. We would be standing on the street corner or, you know, standing on campus. And when students would walk by, we would say, excuse me, could I do a philosophy of life survey with you? You know, and if they agreed, then we'd go through all these questions. And I remember the last questions were something like, if you died today, would you go to heaven? And then the last question was, would you like to know for sure?
Tricky.
Ooh, smart. Yeah.
And that's when we would take out the Four Spiritual Laws booklet. And basically what it was the plan of salvation.
Right.
You know, so if they went through all of these laws that we showed them and then prayed the sinner's prayer.
Did you ever get anybody to come join the group?
Sometimes.
Can you just kind of paint a picture for us of like, what is your everyday life like with them? So you're surveying people on the street and you ended up living with them, right?
Right.
So the girls are living in one place and Dawn is living somewhere else with the boys, right?
Right.
Tell us about that.
You know, we would basically do everything together. We would all ride together, start our day. And it was like everything we did had to be for evangelizing the world, basically. It was to bring the gospel to every nation.
Right.
It's a lot of pressure. Every nation?
Yeah. If we wanted to do something secular, you know, something that basically most students our age would do, like get involved with extracurricular activities, for example. And if we brought it to the staff members that we wanted to do such and such, they wouldn't come right out and say, no, you can't do that. But instead, they would use what I thought was shame, basically. Instead of saying, no, you can't do that, they would say, well, now, Gloria, is that in line with your goals and objectives? And of course, if the answer was no, then the question will be, then why do you want to do this?
I mean, that's a tool of control while still making you feel like you're in control.
Gosh, I remember when I hadn't lived there for very long, something had happened where I had mentioned earlier about just how difficult it was when people would laugh at me. I remember experiencing being laughed at a lot, even in this group. When I hadn't lived there for very long, we were making some dessert and I remember that it had cut bananas on the top. And when I took the dessert out of the fridge, I noticed that the bananas had turned brown, you know? I mean, at the time, you know, I really had no idea how to keep that from happening. But I just knew that I was becoming really upset about it. And my roommates seemed to think it was funny that I was getting so upset. They were just laughing at me because I was so upset about these bananas turning brown. You know, And it was like, the more that they'd laugh, the more upset I became.
Yeah, yeah. I bet.
Yeah. No one wants to be laughed at when they're upset or in general. Yeah.
Yeah.
And were these roommates from the group?
Right, right.
And how many people are in the group at that point?
The people who were living in the apartment building, they were pretty much considered part of the core group. I think there were 5 women and 5 men, I believe it was.
Oh, so pretty small.
Yeah. But when we would evangelize and have people accept Christ, they would be part of our group in that they would come to our Bible studies. But, I mean, they wouldn't actually live with us.
Right. Okay. Where were the Bible studies? Were those at a church or were those at like the house? Or
they were on campus.
And what was his plan? Like, did he want to grow it outside of campus?
Yeah, eventually. I mean, it did happen eventually, but it was after I left.
So did he want everybody in the group to just stick around even after they graduated and kind of grow this thing?
I think he did.
Yeah.
Whenever we'd find people who really wanted to go deeper with the group, these people were called our disciples, you know, which looking back, I think, wow, that's kind of creepy. I mean,
yeah. You know,
each of us had people or our disciples who we were working more closely with.
To try to kind of pull them in more.
Right. We'd also go out and do evangelizing together.
Were your behaviors and thoughts getting more extreme before you left?
I kind of thought so. Yeah. The church that everybody was attending, and that was another thing, is that everybody had to attend the same church. You know, I mean, we did everything together.
Yes.
But I remember when the group first started, everybody was just really, really enthusiastic about us. You know, when we would take over the Sunday evening service, for example, the church would just be packed, you know.
Oh, really?
Interesting.
Yeah. But then as it got toward the end, you know, like 2 or 3 years in, not very many people would show up whenever we would be in charge of the Sunday service. Eventually, other Christians didn't even like us.
You know? Right.
Because we thought that we were the only ones who were really evangelizing and sharing the gospel the way that Jesus said.
Mm-hmm.
It was this big us against them type of situation.
What was your relationship with Don like? Like, how did you feel about him? Well, is he the one who's sort of like dictating how everyone is spending their time and what they're doing?
I mean, he was totally in charge. One of the interesting things about Portland, Oregon is that it's very, very white.
Right.
Actually, the Pacific Northwest is very white, you know, period.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mentioned that to say that I was the only black person in the group, which was really common for Portland, Oregon, just to be the only black person on the job and, you know, at various events. So not only was I the only black person in the group, but I was the first black person that most of the people in the group had even known.
That is crazy.
Yeah, it really was. It really was. I mean, it, you know, it just put so much pressure on me.
Right.
You know, it was like it was my job to be basically the ambassador of all of the black people, you know, in the world, you know.
Right. Oh, my gosh.
Yes. Yes. It was like, OK, once again, I don't fit in.
Wow.
You know, and I always felt like I was the other.
Yeah.
You know, and that I was totally different from everybody else. You know, it was like they just never let me forget that. You know?
How did they treat you?
Sometimes they treated me okay. But there was definitely a double standard. Like, I remember, you know, a white person would say something or tell a particular joke or whatever. And if I were to do the same thing, you know, I have people look at me like they really disapproved, you know, because I was black and the only black person in the group. It was like no matter what I did, it just stood out. And yes, there were plenty of times where I would receive this big lecture and the staff woman would say to me something like, we have to really be careful and really mindful of how we come across to other people.
Oh, God.
What am I doing? Yeah. That's actually something else that's a sign of autism, is that autistic people tend to be, well, I certainly tended to be bullied a lot. And one of the forms of bullying basically involves being lectured by teachers or by managers at work. Basically, like I'm a child.
Right.
And autistic people tend to come across as childlike. That's something else that I've noticed even today is that even though I'm at least like 20 years older than most of my peers, people will still sometimes feel the need to tell me what to do or basically to be parental with me, which is really insulting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. On occasion, there would be other Black people who would maybe come to our meetings, like our what we call sing and share. This was, I think, every Wednesday at noon or something like that on campus. Mm-hmm. There was this man who he and I would lead the singing. You know, we'd play the guitar together and we'd figure out what songs we wanted to do. Now, that was an interesting situation, too, because he was somebody who I did really connect with. But the people in the group, especially the staff members, were not happy about that at all because they didn't believe in interracial relationships.
Oh.
No.
I wish this weren't true. I wish I were kidding.
Wow.
Oh, man.
Yeah. And they could tell that he and I really were into each other, you know.
So did they have a talk with you about it? Like, what did they do?
Yeah. I mean, they would just, you know, tell me that I really needed to watch how I was being with. I don't want to use his real name. I'll just say Bob.
Okay.
So something really embarrassing that would happen occasionally at these sing and share meetings is I remember there was this one time when a Black man came to the meeting, and as soon as he walked in, everybody started looking for me. You know, because it was like, you know, I finally have somebody I could date.
Oh, no.
Wow.
You know? Yeah.
Wow.
And so, you know, they introduced us right away, you know, and I mean, it was like the only thing we had in common that I knew of that we were both Christians and we were both Black.
Right.
Yeah. But it was really, really embarrassing.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Of course, needless to say, he never came back because, I mean, here he was looking for some fellowship with other believers, you know, but, you know, instead he got this dating service.
Oh, that's horrible.
You know? And, oh, my God. Something else that would happen regarding dating and relationships and stuff. Occasionally, the staff woman of the group, she would get all the women together and she would kind of tease us, you know, one by one. She would say, I see you with, you know, Jim, for example. And she would tell all of my, you know, roommates and I, you know, who she saw us with. But the thing that was really awkward and weird was that she was only telling the white women.
Oh, right. What a fun game for you.
Yeah. And then when the game was over, there was like this elephant in the living room.
Right.
I'm sure that she was just hoping that I wouldn't ask, you know, well, who do you see me with?
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah.
But of course, I did have to ask because, you know, she told everybody else, you know. And so finally, I would ask, well, so who do you see me with? And then there would be this really awkward silence. Mm. And then she would say, you know, we really need to keep praying that God will bring some Black men to the group.
Stop it. Oh, yeah. My God.
I wish I was kidding.
Oh, my God.
The fact that this is in the 70s is so terrifying.
It wasn't that long ago.
It really wasn't.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I just, once again, just felt totally left out. Just like I really, really didn't belong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Hate all of that.
Yeah.
So you feel out of place in this group, which you kind of had gone to find a place where you belong, right?
Right.
So were you just kind of getting like disillusioned with it slowly as all of these little things start happening?
I had something specific happen. Something that, you know, you wouldn't think would be a factor at all.
Mm-hmm.
But what specifically happened was after almost 3 years, there was a new person who moved into our apartment, a new woman who had moved in. And so we were kind of juggling who was going to be in which bedroom. And finally, it ended up that I had my own bedroom for the first time in my life.
Ah.
And so when people ask, you know, well, what caused me to finally leave the group? And I just tell them I got my own bedroom for the first time in my life. And that sounds so weird, but that's exactly what happened.
It actually doesn't sound weird to me at all. It makes perfect sense. I feel like the stories we hear a lot about the moment where somebody realized that they needed to leave are, I went away by myself and like was able to reconnect with myself, you know, or like I got a little bit of space away. So I realized I'm not happy. This situation is not making me happy. When you're constantly with people all the time, you know, you're like stuck in the world. So that actually makes perfect sense to me.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, that's interesting.
One thing that I didn't mention is that I'm the second oldest of 8 kids.
Oh,
and so
wow.
There were always but plenty of people around. And I mean, I remember for a while there that I actually not only shared a bedroom, but I shared a bed with 2 of my sisters.
Oh, wow.
So it was like there were always these people around. But when I finally got my own bedroom, then it was like I could finally think.
Yeah.
So when I finally got my own bedroom and had my own space and had the time to myself, I realized that so many of the beliefs I had that I said I was willing to die for, I didn't believe them for a minute.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah. And I thought, well, if that's the case, then I can't remain in this group, you know, yeah. if I don't agree with these major tenets, you know.
Did you say you were willing to die for them? Was that a part of it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
How did they take the news that you were leaving?
Amazingly enough, well, Dawn seemed to take it really well, which really surprised me, whereas the staff woman didn't take it well at all. I remembered her asking, well, how do you know you're making the right decision, you know? And I had to tell her, I really can't tell you how I know, but I just know that this is what I need to do.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and something else that helped me to come to that decision, too. I mean, getting my own bedroom was really the main catalyst. But something else that really helped me was I started seeing a therapist for the first time in my life.
Ah.
I thought that some of his ideas were very progressive.
Hmm.
He gave me this book. The name of the book is Your Perfect Right. It's a book about assertiveness, being assertive. That was something that I had never heard of before.
Hmm.
I was so used to having other people not only tell me what to do, but bully me.
Right.
And it just had never occurred to me that it was okay to stand up to people and set boundaries and say that this is what I will and will not accept.
I need to buy this book. Yeah. Sounds great.
It really is.
So this was just like a whole new way of thinking for you.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Totally.
Wow.
The way that I met the people who I ended up living with was I went to this conference. It was the Christian Music Festival of the Rockies or something like that.
Wow.
It was in Denver, Colorado. Basically, it was, you know, a music contest.
Oh, fun.
Yeah. You know, I didn't necessarily get very far, but a little bit of trivia. Kathy Lee Gifford was one of my judges.
That's
I always tell people that little bit of trivia. When I was at this conference, you know, I met these people who just so happened that they lived in Tacoma. And, you know, and I told them that I was interested in moving to Tacoma. And I told them why. And so they offered to let me live with them for a while.
Whoa, and, you know,
so
that's nice.
It was like everything just came together. You know?
I'm so happy that the people that you met after that were good people. Because I feel like you're doubly vulnerable at that point, right?
Yes, exactly.
You're like leaving this thing and trying to figure out where to go again. And yeah, that's so great.
Oh, yeah.
So then where did you land with your faith?
After I lived in Tacoma for a few months, and then I eventually moved back to Portland. I mean, I would still go to church occasionally during that time, but I also wanted to experience the various things that I was always told I wasn't supposed to do,
right.
You know, like sex and alcohol. You know, I heard about this college that was, it was a college where they took your life experiences into consideration. What really, really worked for me was that instead of taking tests, which I realize that I'm not good at all. And that tests really don't show what you know. I mean, they, you know, show how well you can take tests.
Yeah, if you're good at memorizing. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. But instead of taking tests, we would write essays. Mm. And boy, my grades just shot up.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I certainly became sexual and realized that I was bisexual. You know, I mean, I just realized all these things about myself.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
But I didn't become an atheist until like maybe 30 years later.
Oh, wow.
Wow. Give somebody their own bedroom and yeah.
What would you say you learned from the experience? And, you know, what would you say to someone else who maybe is autistic and struggling to find where they belong? Do you have any advice?
I could give advice, but I know that their situations would be way different right. from what I experienced.
Right.
Know? A good therapist is a big help.
Yeah.
Helping you to be able to set boundaries and to be able to develop self-respect, you know, and high self-esteem.
Right.
Which is something that's really difficult to do if everybody around you is, you know, thinking badly of you and, you know, thinking
of course.
That you don't have much going for you, and, you know.
Right, yeah. And just straight up being racist and telling you not to date white people.
yeah, exactly.
Gonna shout out friend of the show and one of our previous guests, cult expert Steve Hassan, one more time here. So he gave a presentation on autism and cults to the Asperger Autism Network, and he listed some bullet points, so I'm gonna list them here for you guys. How to protect yourself if you are on the autism spectrum. He says, learn more about undue influence. Look at behaviors and not just words. Don't disclose personal information to new acquaintances. Be wary of anyone putting a lot of pressure on you to join anything quickly. If it's a legitimate group, they will stand up to scrutiny. Do your research on leaders, the history, the criticisms, etc., and that includes looking into who owns any website or article you might look at. Use keywords in Google like scam or brainwashing when you're searching to do your research, and always take into account who's saying it. Just judge the merits of the group, not the attractiveness of the recruiter, and if you're not sure, ask questions. And if you have a loved one who has Asperger's or autism, here are some bullet points for you. Maintain good communication with them. It's important to have a relationship with them. Help your loved one research new people or groups, maybe even go to a group's meeting with them. Teach healthy boundaries and assertiveness, as Gloria learned here, and avoid giving them ultimatums or threats because it doesn't help, and make sure that you get professional help early on. So tell us about your life now. So you are you're a polyamorous sex educator, is that right?
Yes.
That's great.
Yeah, tell us about it.
I've been on various panels and, you know, I've done presentations. And in 2017 was when I first started teaching this workshop that I had created and developed called Transcending Shame.
Ooh.
You know, and I just thought that this class is so appropriate for me because there was shame pretty much everywhere I turned around. And there were a lot of things that I was ashamed of that really were not my fault, you know, like my skin color, for example, or being a woman,
right.
You know. So I've taught this workshop at, you know, various conferences. In January, I taught this workshop that I had just developed, you know. It was called We Do Not Live Single Issue Lives. And it comes from the Audre Lorde quote, there is no such thing as single issue struggles because we do not live single issue lives.
Right. I love that.
When I look at all of the, for lack of a better word, for all the crap that I went through, you know, and all the abuse to get to where I am today, I don't want to say that I wouldn't change a thing because I would change a lot of things,
right.
You know.
Right.
But at the same time, I would say that if I had never gone through these things, you know, I couldn't have done these workshops and, you know.
Made you who you are, yeah.
Yes.
Well, I think that that is amazing.
Can people follow you on social media?
Let's see. On Facebook and Instagram, my username is Gloria Jackson Nefertiti, but there's no dash. Also, you can follow me on Twitter at Gloria JN. My website is called Not Gloria Jean. So it's notgloriajean.net.
Thank you so much for talking to us.
Yeah, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. I really enjoyed this.
All right. Well, Megan, time for the question.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm ready.
We don't know specifically what this group is called, but so let's say you're in college mm-hmm. and you pass by a, oh my God, what is it called? You pass by a table of Christians.
Wow, you couldn't remember the name for Table of Christians? Are you Hilaria Baldwin or something?
How you say...
Table of Christians.
No, table wasn't the word that I wanted. I don't know why. The only one coming to my head is brochure. It's not a brochure. What the fuck is it? It's a table okay. with brochures on it.
Okay, you know, okay, okay. Yeah.
Of it's Christians. Like uh-huh. A table full of really nice people who seem to have a community going, and maybe you don't have a lot of friends and don't feel like you belong, and they're so welcoming and warm to you. What do you think? Would you get sucked in potentially?
Potentially, there is definitely room for me to get sucked in. Yep.
I feel like there's such a clear pattern for us. Like the overtly Christian groups, probably we wouldn't join, but the spiritual groups, you probably would join, and the like self-help or like yep. ambition groups, I probably would join. But the principles are there, you know?
Community. Yeah, I mean, I the community thing is clutch because I was
clutch.
Super I was super lonely my first 2 years in college. So yeah, that would have been irresistible.
I didn't go to a proper college. I went to one semester at a community college. And then I was like, I'm doing music. I'm not going to do this. A lot of good that did me. But in that period of life, I think I wanted community so badly. But, you know, honestly, I was so obsessed with skater boys when I was 17 and living in Glendale by myself that I think the thing that would have appealed to me most is if like a table of skater boys were waiting for me somewhere and invited me into their skater boy community, because that shit, ooh, that was my shit.
We would have lost one.
Not the Christian version, but the skater boy version I'm in, 17.
Anything that offered community would be very tempting for me in college.
Yeah, hundo percent. What else we got? I think...
No, I think that's it. But I'm so glad everybody listened to this episode. We hope to see you again next week. And remember to follow your gut, watch out for red flags, and never,
ever trust. Later.
Skater.